this movie is called Lord of the Rings.
The Two Towers. Not the Twin Towers, as I...
No, I know, but that's my question. So, obviously, the books were written before the movies, but the movie came out, The Two Towers, in 2002.
Yeah.
Which means it was a year, if not less than a year, since...
No, it was December, so it was a year and a half, or okay, a year and
so,
4 months.
Yeah, so a little over a year. So, it's still pretty fresh.
Yeah, I'd say so.
After the Twin Towers incident, do you think that they thought that was going to have any sort of impact on sales of the movie? And if it was in bad taste, I feel like nowadays people would think that. I feel like maybe then, I mean, not that it was too long ago, maybe people didn't care as much, but I feel like now people find a way to get upset about everything. Like, how dare you release a movie about two towers when we witnessed that our towers, and I can't. I'm hurt.
I have a... here's another question. What are the two towers?
You're talking about in the movie?
It's got to be, I guess, Isengard and then the Eye of Sauron. Those are the only towers I can think of.
Yeah, there's a tower in Mordor, and then there's a tower in Isengard, and I'm assuming it's kind of
the Eye of Sauron. It's just weird because they're not close together. They're not...
Right, so like, in the movie, he does
on the same side, but it's not.
Saruman says, "This will be the official joining or something of the two towers." The line is said.
It already happened.
The line was said in the movie.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it kind of already did, but this was just.
Yeah, really, I mean, that happened like in the first 45 minutes of Fellowship. Saruman's like, "Hey, I'm bad now."
This was just the push of the bad guys, and the bad guys' home are these two towers, so they had to. And then, you know, the next one is the good guys coming back. I'm seeing a very similar theme here to Star Wars.
Yes, yeah, and like I said, this one is kind of like very Empire-ish.
Yeah, but before we get into that, dude, we got to talk about some other stuff before we just dive straight in. We're getting a little too hot here, a little too hot. I've made a petition. I haven't, but I think I'm going to.
Okay. Petitions always do stuff. They're never useless.
Ban vehicles from the world. I was going to say the U.S., but I'm going in. If I'm going to do this, I'm going all in. And we should just go back to the days where we can ride horse and buggy. Or just walk.
Dude, we just talked about the price of oats in a previous episode.
I think we did because we were talking about car issues, but all I can think about is my car issues still.
No, we were talking... That was when oil was like -$40.
Oh, you're right. But yeah, since I just got my car checked and they said it's going to cost $1,400 to repair, I might as well just have a horse at that point, you know?
Yeah, that'd be a lot cooler. I mean, it would take you roughly three times as long to get anywhere.
But do you think we should street legalize horses, though? Have a horse lane?
Are they not?
What? Are they not?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure horses are technically street legal.
No, stop it right now.
Horses. Because, I mean, there's horse-drawn carriages and shit.
Try that again?
Horse-drawn carriages.
There's horse. Horse-drawn.
No. I think the audience will know
that. Being on the road, similarly to cyclists and runners who utilize the roadways.
Boom.
But there's specific regulation. So it's not, they're not really street legal as far as like a in the same terms of a vehicle.
Well, no, and that would be stupid if they were.
But I guess with what I was saying, like have a horse lane, like there's a bike lane, I guess that could happen. If a government was like, yeah, we're going to build an extra lane here and it's just for horses, I don't see anything wrong with that. I'll lead the charge.
It says that a horse's max speed is 55 miles an hour, but there's no way you can go 55 miles an hour on the back of a horse. That's nuts.
You don't think you could go, you don't think you could go 50 miles an hour on a horse?
Like if I'm riding a horse, there's no way that horse can go 55 miles an hour. That's like saying if the max human possible speed is like 27 miles per hour, that's what Usain Bolt did, right? He couldn't do that with like, I know the ratio is off, but he couldn't do that with like a 50 pound backpack
on him.
He couldn't do that with me on him.
Yeah, that ratio is a little off. But horses are
horses are can actually be really fucking heavy, but I think on average they're like 1,200 pounds, 1,500 pounds. So if a human on average weighs about like 180 pounds, or an American 200, then you know that's like a tenth of their body weight, roughly. That's some poor math, but let's say 10%. Then, you know, if you weigh 180 pounds, if you're wearing 18 pounds on you, which isn't that much, but still, you're not running your max speed at that.
No, they're not going to run their max speed, obviously, if they have any additional weight. That's clear. But I still feel like having a horse having a tenth of their weight is a lot easier for them to carry us carry a tenth of our weight, because I feel like they got some strength, bro. I feel like there's some muscular dudes. Like, take a chunk horse, dude. Have you ever just, like...
Like a Clydesdale, like those massive horses.
Have you passed a horse, like, or like a field with horses, and you just see one that's just chonky, dude? Not even all humans are chonky, but I feel like strength to weight ratio and their percentage of body fat is just so much lower than the average human. Kind of awesome, dude, to ride just a super tubby horse.
Yes or no? I mean, I do see tubster horses. Can I just say I don't like chonky? I don't like that word.
Well, I'm using them all. Tubby, chonky.
A tubby's okay, because I think of when someone called Patrick on SpongeBob tubby.
I go, tubby.
So that's okay. But chonkers feels like a bullshit Reddit beta male kind of, you know.
Chonky, chunkster.
Gross.
Fatty McGee.
Okay, Fatty McGee is all right. Apparently your average galloping speed is like 25 to 30 miles per hour. So that's a little faster than I thought. Like your average, like you can keep that up over distance.
That's gallop, a freaking sprint, dude.
But apparently a sprint can be, a horse has sprinted 55 miles per hour over a short distance with a person on it, which is nuts.
That's crazy, dude. They don't even care. They don't even know they have somebody on them, dude.
I guess not.
Like picking up paper.
You know, for like the Kentucky Derby, I mean, I know that like if you've ever seen the jockeys, they're always really small. Like I can never be a jockey, no matter what. I'm just too large.
What?
Like jockeys, like they're really short, really small guys. Like you know, for the horse racing.
You're telling me
that's got to be a thing, though, right?
You're too tubby.
Well, even at high school me, I was still like me being 6'4", you know, my minimum weight is still too big.
You're reminding me, since we're going through like all the stuff in my house.
Oh, is there pictures?
Lots of old photos, and I came across your old yearbooks.
Oh, no.
We look bad. I also found out I look better in my 11th grade yearbook photo than I do in my senior year yearbook photo when I had the casual senior photos, because you have two. You have your casuals and then you have your formals.
Oh, yeah. No, my formals were much better.
Two. And I still did better the year before, dude. And like you take time to get those senior photos, you know. You take a day, you hire somebody, you get some nice photos. I still think my 11th grade photo's better, dude. Boy, didn't know how to smile in high school, I tell you what. Those were the days.
Yeah, that's crazy, dude. Most jockeys only stand 5 feet tall, and the vast majority of them are between 105 and 119 pounds. So there's no way.
Nah, it's just because they can grip the horse better, you know?
That makes no sense. I mean, if anything, I feel like I could koala a horse better than them, because I mean my wingspan, you know, like I could probably I could lock fingers underneath a horse if I'm bear hugging it.
Could you imagine if people rode horses like not sitting up on them,
just like laying straight down?
Basically, like, just laying on them, stomach down, and wrapping your legs and arms as fast.
No, just the arms. Your legs are shooting straight out. They're the spoiler of the horse.
Yeah, you have to just wave your legs around like to the right kind of angle. They're almost like wings of an airplane, and so they kind of help direct it and like with the airflow and everything. Can somebody sketch that, please? Whoever's listening, if you have any skills whatsoever. I want to see a photo of somebody riding a horse like that, please. Preferably,
man, that's actually really interesting though, because like, you know, a jockey has to, you know, obviously be that small because they're trying to maintain, you know, like not be heavy for the horse, but also be powerful enough to like control a horse moving 40 miles per hour. So these like some little like kind of like Bruce Lee motherfuckers, like, you know, like pure muscle, 105 pounds of just pure, just constricted. Like they can't move any of their bodies because they just got to be so tight. I don't like that.
I am muscle. I was trying to do a playoff of I am speed. Lightning McQueen. Mirror, 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 mirror.
Yikes.
That was the sound of like race cars shooting past, not an
airport. I think race car, like NASCAR drivers are also kind of small. Dude. But that can't be for the same reason. That can't be shedding weight.
That can't be because they have to grip a horse better. I mean, let's be real. You want to be on this NASCAR, dude? You want me to you want to be a sponsored NASCAR driver? Get on this horse right now. Wrap your arms and legs around him. Dang, dude. That's
Wait, hold
impressive.
On. Hold on.
You're on the team.
Lightning McQueen in cars is obviously a NASCAR car. So he doesn't have headlights. He has stickers. And they even mention that in the movie that he just has stickers, right? Doesn't one of the characters call him stickers?
Yeah.
Doesn't he have his headlights on, though, when he hits the, like, because isn't there a night scene where he's, like, off of his truck and he's, like, running around and he's all confused? And doesn't he have headlights on, or am I crazy?
You're crazy. He doesn't have headlights.
Okay. He's just, like, street lights he's night riding it.
He's got night vision, dude.
Dude, that's got to be a thing. Lightning, that's not how you spell lightning, that's lighting. Lightning McQueen.
He doesn't have headlights, brother.
On?
He gets Question headlights. Mark?
Someone asked, are his eyes headlights? That's not right.
Well, you know what's crazy? So, yeah. In the beginning of Cars, we're going to open up a box of worms. Is that how the saying goes?
A worm of boxes.
We're going to open up a can of boxes right here. In the beginning of the movie, when he has fans in the stands, and they're like, oh, Lightning McQueen, and there's these two.
Oh, you got to do the flash. That thing.
Yeah, I think the idea, the implication is that they flashed him.
Like they flashed their headlights. Flat, but the implication is that, yes.
Which is supposed to be, I guess, sensual by showing your headlights. So does that mean every time a car in that movie shines their headlights, they're like just lifting their shirts up and letting the world see their nipples?
Does that mean that headlights are then therefore sexualized in cars?
That's what I'm saying, dude. But no one else in the rest of the movie has an issue when anybody else turns on their headlights.
Yeah, like, you know, or just has them explode.
Lightning McQueen go, ooh.
Well, yeah, I guess the implication would... Well, no, were they those old cars from like the 80s, I think, that had like... I think it was the old Porsche or the old Ferrari that had like the pop-up ones that like when they're not on, they like go back down into the hood of the car. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. So were they those or did they just turn them on?
They were those, but they didn't have headlights if they didn't like... Maybe they just... Dude, I don't know. It doesn't matter. Headlights are headlights, bro. The issue was... their headlights.
Yep. Apparently he gets his headlights replaced, or he actually gets real headlights in the second movie that I never saw.
He gets nipple implants.
Nipple implants. He was like Kyle XY originally. You remember that?
Bro, except he didn't have a belly button, so I don't know what you're talking about.
No, he didn't have nipples either, I'm pretty sure.
Really?
I just looked up the scene also. They were the type of cars where their headlights come all the way out.
It still doesn't matter though.
Obviously that makes it worse because are the only type of cars that can normally have them hidden. And everyone else pretty much just always has them out. So there's some very strange implications
that,
there.
Next time you're driving at night, you need to turn your headlights on. With that being said, let's jump into some movies, dude. Jump into some movie news, dude.
Yeah.
So something kind of interesting that I found.
Hold on, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Oh,
yes, right, I'm recording.
How are we doing today?
Well, it's okay, but how are what can I do for you?
Me, you,
okay.
You and me. How are you guys doing today? I'm speaking right to you guys, the audience, because right now You know, Nate's off doing his thing, and you know what? That's okay.
We're just going to cut this out, so.
What? Oh, he's back. Welcome back. Sorry, I was connecting with the audience, and you kind of interrupted it. So mm-hmm. if you want to leave for another couple minutes, you know, we were kind of getting okay. on a level. But I'll send you a text, like, when you want to come back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Did you leave? Are you gone? I feel like I can't do this anymore because I feel like we're being listened to. I think we're just going to jump back into the regular podcast. Nate?
Oh, the grocery store.
Nope, he's gone. All right. So, welcome back, guys. Let me start over. My name is Tyler. My name is Tyler Gillette. You know, if we're going to go real deep here, my middle name is Charles. Tyler Charles Gillette. And this is me, you know, being upfront, honest with you guys, getting vulnerable, you know? Talk a little bit about me, myself, my full name.
I don't want to cut that out though.
Oh, you're back. You're back. You're actually mm-hmm. back.
Yeah.
Were you there the whole time?
No.
I didn't think so.
Okay. I did listen.
So welcome back.
I'm gonna listen to it.
I want a one time with the audience and I really don't appreciate it.
Again, not gonna be in there.
It is. It's gonna be there. And if it's not, I'm gonna be really upset because you know, I had a really, really close connection that was starting. And
if it's funny, I'll leave it in. But I'm like I said, it's going to be cut out.
Cool. So that's going to be left in. I'll make sure to remind you about it throughout the episode. That way, if I mention it later,
this isn't going
to
make it in either.
There, then, we can have some backlash. But time to get into some movie news. And we'll get back to our audience connection later.
We're not going
to
talk about me and Tia, the two cars that.
No, we're not. We're done. We're done with cars. So something interesting that I found or came across, somehow yep. Marvel related. I feel like I always find something Marvel related, which is
here we go.
Not intentional.
Feels pretty intentional.
So Endgame setup for the new Loki show that's coming, you know,
yes.
How like in Endgame, how he got the Tesseract and then like disappeared and you never know what happened. Mm-hmm. Where they're going through their time heist and people are like, oh yeah, that's gonna be the start to the Loki series. Apparently it was an accident.
Like they didn't know they were making a Loki series back then. They just did that because I thought it was funny.
Well, I don't even know if they might not have even known they were gonna make a Loki series. I'm not sure. Or they might have, I don't know. But they said, like, when asked if Marvel, like Kevin Feige or whatever, had them put that in the movie, like that twist where he just disappears in order to lead into Loki.
Right.
They replied, McFeely, who is, I believe, one of the writers, said, no, we just thought it was a juicy way to upset the heist. That's what he says in quotes.
Mm.
So, and then I guess they're like, oh, that's a good idea, which is kind of interesting because I think they were planning on having a Loki show already. So I wonder if that changed the entire trajectory of the show. Or they thought, oh, this is a perfect way to just lead into it.
Yeah, because the only other way to do it, other than have some bullshit reason on how he... I mean, I guess they could have just done something off screen or something. I don't know. But they were either going to do... Because the obvious other choice was just kind of like how the Black Widow movie is going to be sometime in her past, was do the same thing with Loki. But, I don't know. I'm kind of glad that they're doing this, though, because then you still get all the like character development of him through all the movies. You don't have to go back. Like, that's one thing that's kind of weird about like Black Widow is that you don't like you're going to be watching this movie with some pre-version of her pre-Avengers. So it's going to be kind of like, I guess
that's not true at all, actually, because their time heist happened in the first Avengers. So all of Loki's character development after the first Avengers.
That's totally true.
Which actually might be a more mischievous version of Loki, because I feel like he gained some sort of humility and stuff like that after, you know, like his mom died in the second Thor movie.
Mischievous is a pretty like light way of putting, you know, like a fairly bad dude.
Yeah, but I'm just saying it's still, you know, more, I guess you could even just say more evil of a character because he, you know, was... As he progressed, he got a little more heroic, still stayed, you know, mischievous, but he gained a little bit of humility and, I guess, respect for others to some extent after, you know, like I said, the death of his mom and then all that other stuff that he went through the next few movies. But this is just
right.
After he decided, oh, I'm going to, like, take over the world and stuff. And he's, like, in the process of doing that. He just got stopped and was like, well, got this Tesseract thing, so see you, dudes. I'm going to go take over the world somewhere else now. But anyways, I just thought that was interesting because, yeah, I thought that that was actually, you know, put there for reasons. But it was an accident. Next thing, which is a little more interesting, a little more overall encompassing about movies in general.
Okay.
Regal Cinemas and AMC Theaters, which are two very big theater franchises.
Are you going to talk about the Universal thing?
Yeah.
Ah, yes.
No longer going to show Universal movies in theaters for,
so
I guess,
this is a
foreseeable future.
This is like a permanent thing, yeah. Like a, unless it's changed, there's that. It's not like a like quarantine like weird like thing. And this is like a permanent change,
right? Well, because the reason they're doing it is because, yeah, Universal is saying after quarantine, they continue. They're planning on still like releasing things what online.
Online the same day as they would be theatrically released, which is crazy. And that's the there have been like a few instances historically of, like, you know, theaters basically being scared that they were going to get replaced, that they were going to be replaced with VCRs. And so there was a big panic back then. And then obviously when streaming came around, like when Netflix first became a thing, also that was another big time where they were like, this is it. No one's going to go to the movies anymore. And that has not been true by a wide margin. I mean, if anything, box office numbers have only grown. Even when you account for inflation overall, like people go to movies multiple times, like way more, than they have in the past. But, what's it? This is quite different because, I mean, being able to watch them the same day. Now, I wonder how much it'll cost to watch it the same day. Like, will you have to rent the movie for like $15?
Right. And it's also interesting because when you go to a movie theater,
every person has to buy a ticket.
Right. So if you and your
I rent it and I have my five buddies over, you know, we only paid once.
They're going to make you scan your room. It's going to come over with like they're going to come up with an app where you have to like scan your room and it's a facial recognition. So you go over your room and depending on how many faces it sees, how much you have to pay.
The UFC is notorious for like punishing people, not individuals having like, you know, trying to show it for, you know, like show their fights with their friends at their homes. But you know that like UFC fights cost like $60 to $80 for the pay-per-view to watch it in your house.
And you, I feel like you do that because, like, I mean, there's more movies
coming. It's expensive and it's like a big event. Usually, you know, I mean, well, UFC fights happen all the time, but like, you know, especially the big ones are a little bit more rare. And there's like undercard fights and stuff too. But whenever like there have been instances of, obviously, if you were like a business, like if a bar or if like a gym or something like that wants to like show a pay-per-view fight for their clientele, they have to pay way more. Like they have to pay like the business license for it. And it's way more expensive. And that's why they usually will have like a cover or something like that if they want to do that. But there have been instances where, like, you know, a gym will be like, not officially, but they'll just be like, you know, like a small little boxing gym will be like, hey, like, let's get our buddies together and we'll watch the UFC fight. We'll just do it here. We got a projector. Like, it's not a thing that we're making money on. It's just like buddies getting together and they just pay the regular pay-per-view and like UFC finds out and like sues them and like gets all insane about it.
Right. So
that's what I'm trying to see is like, is there going to be like some kind of similar thing with movies, or is the movie pass going to be really expensive? Are you going to see like, are you going to go to like a bar or something like that? And they're going to be like, hey, Avengers just came out. Y'all want me to throw it on? Like, that'll be weird, right?
Yeah. So I don't know how they're going to make the same amount of money unless they charge more. But also here's my question is, what do you think about it? Because so these theaters are basically saying, okay, so Universal is saying they're seeing so much success by releasing them this way, obviously, because of the quarantine.
Yeah.
So, and the movie theaters are closed. So, obviously, they're going to see more success. And I somewhat get where they're coming from as far as, like, not saying I necessarily agree with it or not, but I understand that they say, okay, cool, gives me more people options. We can probably make more money doing this, have the options of seeing it in theaters or at home. And then all these theaters are like, well, we're not going to show you movies. So, but from the theater's perspective, do you think it's smart of them or not? Because if they want to make money off of those movies, well, just by saying we're not going to show them at all, they're obviously then losing out on any money. But do you think that their perspective is, well, I think a lot of people might see him at home anyways. We're going to make less. We have to at least make a stand, because Universal can't stand to just do it through releases, at least, you know, right now, like at home release. And so they're going to need to have to stop that. And that's kind of their way of standing up. Like, what do you think? Do you think it's even worth it? Or do you think that theaters are going to say, well, we're not going to show them, so that people are just going to be like, well, if I can't see it, then I'm just going to get it at home anyways. And they're just kind of handing Universal more money that way. They're making it more successful.
So I think what the issue really is that people are not going to want to stop going to the theaters. It's more important. Yeah. It's more like there's more to it than going than just watching the movie itself. It's a social aspect. It's a very obviously very common dating, you know, habit, I guess. And, you know, so it's wider than just, you know, having access to the movie. As a consumer, I'm kind of for the idea of Universal showing their stuff, because I watch a lot of movies and, you know, it's expensive one to go to the theater all the time, but it's also not my favorite environment for a lot of things that I watch. Like, you know, watching it at home where I have control over the volume, subtitles, no subtitles, you know, pausing it, that kind of stuff. And I can eat and there's obviously no other people on their phones or talking or any of that kind of stuff. I really like that idea. And so, you know, as a consumer, I'm kind of for it. But broad scale, like how it will affect, I do think that it'll hurt as far as indie movie, like smaller films and less action based blockbusters going into theaters. I think those movies can still make money in the streaming, you know, sphere, but it'll hurt their chances of actually being in theaters. So like, the ability to go see something like The Lighthouse or you know, some of these like smaller A24 style movies will be a lot harder to do the more that you move away from theaters, because, you know, paying for distribution and that kind of stuff when you really can just have it on a site, you know, like A24 could come out with their own site where you rent movies straight from them, and that would, you know, they could probably make a bunch of money doing that way, opposed to having to, you know, cut their revenue in half, sharing with theaters and stuff like that. So I don't know. It's a strange thing. I think, you know, if other production companies, also take this method, then it will have a larger, impact. But I think the theaters are going to fight back enough that, other studios will be scared to do it now that Regal and, Regal and AMC, was that it?
Yeah.
Yeah, now that they are kind of fighting back against it, I mean, those are your two biggest theater chains. Everything else is just your, you know, your small ones like NCG where we're at.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm wondering if you like agree with the theater's decision to do that. Also, because again, like you were saying, from a consumer perspective, you like the idea of being able to see it at home, but I mean, sure, I like watching movies at home, but if I had the chance, hands down, I would always rather see it in a movie theater. That's just me, and it's very opinion-based.
No matter what?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Wow, I can't think of a movie that I'd rather not see in theaters.
Something like Star Wars or Marvel or like your big blockbuster stuff, absolutely. But something like something more intimate or you know, quieter and a little bit more... I don't know. Just, I mean, imagine like The Irishman. I don't want to see The Irishman in theaters. You know what I mean? Like I, that, you know, the amount of people, especially like a crowded theater, if I have a theater by myself, or if there's like one other like couple down the row or something like that, then fine. Perfect. You're like, yeah, great. Like that sounds, I mean, then
yeah,
obviously
I don't ever really,
but crowded theaters full of people talking or, you know, screens, you know, like people on their phone or just shifting around or just crinkling of candy wrappers, all that bullshit.
But I feel like that doesn't happen a ton for me because I don't go to a super, super crowded movie theater all the time, unless it's a premiere of, you know, a big like Marvel movie or something like that. Every time I go, there's, you know, groups here and there, but it's not crazy enough to really distract me. So if it was distracting, then yeah, obviously that would be annoying and that would change my opinion.
when you shortly move to, you know, Alpharetta or whatever, and you're in the city atmosphere, I'm sure, because the times I've seen, you know, movies up there opposed to, you know, up in like the Northland, like more populous areas, it's always a way worse experience. We just are lucky down here where we're just populated enough to have large movie theaters that aren't just like little crap like dollar theaters, but also not popular enough so that if you go in at all, like a slightly off time, as long as you're not there at Friday at 8 p.m., you're going to have like a mostly empty theater.
I still love the experience of going to a theater. But my point is, what we're saying is, the consumer has to be on board with what the theaters are doing, because if there's people that like to go see movies in theaters and all that kind of stuff, but they go, oh, well, the theaters aren't showing the next Fast and Furious, and it's now on, they were just streaming it here. Well, there's people that are going to be like, well, they're not, I'd rather go, but I'm just going to watch it here now because they don't have it. You have to have somebody who likes going to see movies in theaters, but is so passionate about it that they're willing to say, no, I'm not watching that here because I want to see in theater, and I'm taking the theater side. That's my point. Are there enough people out there that are going to
even one of those
be
people
willing to do that?
If Marvel did that, if they said we're going to release our stuff online, and then AMC and Regal boycotted Marvel or Disney movies in general,
right? I think it depends on what the movie is, because I really, really do, and I really like the theater experience, and I think that movies should have the opportunity to be seen in a theater. I think that it depends on the movie. Now, if it was a Marvel movie, because I do want to keep up to date and I'm very excited about what's going to come next, or very at least curious as kind of to what's going to come next, that curiosity is going to win. If theaters aren't showing it, I'm going to watch it. But most other movies, I would definitely try my best to not see them and take that theater side, just because I kind of do appreciate where they're coming from trying to save that industry. Now, I don't necessarily think it's going to go anywhere, but it's just an interesting, because some moves are being made that is altering the way we're going to see movies. So I don't really know what to think about it.
Yeah, I you haven't seen anything, and I'm kind of half asking you this about how much it would cost to, you know, rent a day one release, right?
No, I do not know.
Because I've been for the idea of there being a digital release of movies that you could buy for a while, like before all this, that would come out at the same time. I would just like have to acknowledge that it would be a very like luxury premiere service. Like it would be an expensive thing. Like if you could pay $50 to have your own to rent basically a movie the day it comes out, you know, so that if you wanted to, like say you were somebody, you know, very wealthy, had like a little private theater in your house or something like that, and then you could pay just, you know, to have a movie shown there the day it comes out. That way you never have to deal with the environment. Because I personally, as much as I also like the theater experience for some, like for those kind of things, if I had a private theater in my home and, you know, with like, you know, 10 seats in it or whatever, and I could just have all the boys over and we could just watch a movie in there, like brand new, I'd much rather do that than go to, you know, some stinky AMC.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's going to be interesting, because I do know that there are people that like would rather watch a movie in their home, and I'm not, you know, like shaming them for that. If that's where you want to see a movie, and that's where you enjoy seeing a movie, cool. So I am intrigued with the option of, well, you know, having options, but I would just hate for it to completely take over and destroy theaters too. And I don't think it's at that point.
It's all about, you know, that's the thing, is that it's all about how the companies react. Because I think my general point was earlier is that if the system is set up so that, you know, where the companies just keep going, like say Universal decides to do this and all big movie production companies decide to let their let you stream their movies for some, you know, other cost, as long as it's at least equivalent to the theater cost, the day it comes out, people will still go to the theater, but it'll just be for specific things more than it'll be for, you know, so people will just, they'll continue to watch stuff like Marvel in theaters and other stuff like that for the most part, but they will probably stop going to, there'll probably be less just random, like, you know, hey, let's, you know, what's playing this weekend? Oh, you know, this random movie I've never heard of. Oh, I guess I'll go watch it. Because that still does happen, especially with like older generations that was more accustomed to when they were a kid. They would just go to the movies on a weekend not knowing anything about what was playing or what they were doing. So it'll just change it a little bit. But if, you know, if AMC and Regal just block everybody out that wants to do that, then that could have larger ramifications on what happens to theaters overall. But I don't think this will kill it.
And especially like smaller indie movies that do get shown in theaters and make, you know, a decent chunk from theaters, you have to figure out how to make renting at home or watching a movie like for one watch at home an equivalent price. You know, like we were saying, if it's like a ticket price of, you know, $10, but five people get to watch it, you might run indie movies out of business if they're not going to be shown in theaters. And then you're talking about an $8 or $10, you know, viewing session, but for five people, that's an issue. So again, well, we haven't heard anything about prices or anything.
Because for one thing, most of these indie movies they're not expected, and they don't have to make nearly as much money as, you know, something like a $500 million Avengers movie.
Not as much, but they need to make a profit off it, or else they're not going to be able to make more movies.
I don't think that would ever be an issue, because plenty of people right now, they make profits, and most of the time they have limited theater runs to even begin with, and then after, you know, if they're only shown to you know. Because you can watch The Lighthouse down here. It wasn't showing in our, you know, our theaters around our area. I mean, if you went up to Atlanta, there was probably a couple that were showing it, but only for a few weeks, I'm sure, you know, because it was filling up theaters. So it's really, I would have guessed that for movies like that, theater box office numbers aren't the majority of where they get the money.
But I mean, still, limited is better than nothing, because however many, you know, we'd have to do the research, but it's like for a movie like that, how much do they make in theaters? Because then you would pretty much have to divide that by, like, if you have people that, like, four people sitting down to watch a movie, let's say an average of four people, maybe two or three, but you'd have to divide that number by, like, if we're saying an average of three people, you have to divide that by three, because that's how much you'd be making if, you know, every three people had to buy one ticket. So I don't know. I think it has the potential to still hurt it. Maybe not a ton, but it has that potential. So it's just interesting to see where it'll go, because I don't really have any more news about that, because that was posted as of like yesterday.
If I had to guess, I'd say Universal buckles and changes their plans. I think that they're afraid of missing out because like Universal owns like Jurassic Park. So imagine that like the next Jurassic World movie comes out or whatever.
In this article specifically says we'll no longer show Universal movies like Fast and Furious and Jurassic World. And those are two movies that are coming out within the next year that are.
And I mean, I'm pretty sure Regal and AMC must make up. There are like 4,500. Almost 5,000 screens in the U.S. Like
I would say those two together are over half.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So you're instantly losing out on like a huge market. So I don't. That's to me. That seems like a Universal couldn't take that hit.
Anyways,
unless they are making so much money online. I was just saying, unless they really are making just a ton of money, you know, online, which I don't see that either. But
all right. Well, I say it's time. We need to jump in. I think we've spent, you know, this whole episode is supposed to be all Lord of the Rings, brother. We lingered for a while, but we're here. We need to get on to the main topic at hand, 40 minutes in or something crazy.
Well, yeah, I don't think it'll be that.
roughly 40 minutes in. All right, so movie number two. What'd you think, dude?
Well, I have seen this movie many times. So it's really, and this, oh gosh, it's definitely this one or Fellowship that are my favorite of the three. But man, I'm kind of leaning toward like Fellowship on the rewatches.
I feel like you're going to say the same thing about the third movie. Because because this one, you're like, wow, you know, I think this one might be my favorite. Then we watch this one, you go, well, maybe it's between this one or the last one.
Well, it had been a long time since I had watched all three of them, and I had seen Two Towers the most because it's I think it's regarded like Empire, it's kind of regarded as like the best one like critically and like audience stuff like that, like the, you know, but at the same time I've got like a kind of a sore spot for Fellowship. I don't know, it's fun, it's got more Gandalf stuff in it, which Gandalf is kind of my fave. And in this movie, well, yeah, you find out that he's not quite dead.
Figured.
Yeah. Were you guessing that?
Yeah. Yeah, I was guessing that.
I was trying to think of a way to ask you, like, did you know he wasn't dead?
Well, if you look at the cover of all the movies, he's on them. So I'm like, well, it could be some kind of weird flashback or some other kind of version. And to be honest, I kind of want to talk about that, but let me hold off on that and just give you overall. I loved it, dude.
You loved it?
Oh, I liked it better than the first one.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Just from the beginning, and I think part of this, and I might have to go back and rewatch them again.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how soon that'll be with us having to watch, a bunch of other things, and they are very, they're lengthy movies. So
sure.
Who knows if I actually will rewatch it or when that'll be. But maybe it's because the first movie, I felt like maybe I was just observing the first movie, whereas this one, I was invested in this movie. And I don't do that intentionally. Maybe it was just because it was something brand new and I had something, I had this, what's the word I'm looking for? It was very, hyped up. And so I wanted to live up to certain expectations or whatever, or just like my thought, I had this thought process of what I think Lord of the Rings story-wise might be before you even watch it, just because you've heard so much about it.
Right.
And so if it takes a little bit of a different turn than what you expected, you have to just be like, well, that's fine, and just jump on board, which is true. It is fine. But it's just jumping into something brand new, I guess, feels like more work than once you're a little more invested into it, I guess.
No, I get that. And I think since, all these movies are like 3 hours long or right at, basically. And the first one obviously has a lot to set up. So this second one, since you already know everything and what's basically all the characters, what's going on, it's a lot better paced. And it has a lot less Hobbit stuff going on. There's still Hobbit stuff going on, but I find that most people usually, and myself included, aren't quite as interested as in the Hobbit storylines, like Frodo and Sam, as they are into, and Merry and Pippin, as they are into, Aragorn, Legolas, and Gimli, like that kind of storyline. So, what's up?
Oh, no, and I was going to say, being more invested into it, I was excited to start this movie. Not that I wasn't excited to watch the other one, because I was excited to get into it, but I was excited going into this one just to see where it was going to go. And just from the beginning, because I think the best part of Fellowship was the entirety of the Mines of Moria.
Yeah, okay.
And just that whole sequence of stuff that was going on was my favorite part of the movie. And that's where I felt like it picked up.
Mm-hmm.
And it obviously started off with that, with the whole Gandalf stuff. And from the start, this was the first time, I think, in this series that I actually had one of those giddy, I try to say nerdy, but not even that, because I'm not I don't know too much about Lord of the Rings. So I'm watching for the first time. But even just from when you bring back something from the last movie, one of the best parts of the last movie, and they expand on it and epic stuff is happening from the get-go. I'm smiling yo, I was in it. I was just in it from the beginning. So it was a lot more, I enjoyed this one on a deeper level a lot more than I did the first one.
This movie actually got nominated for Best Picture.
Really?
In 2002. Yeah. I would not have guessed that. I was just reading that right now. Won two other awards and got nominated for a lot. Yeah. So this is, generally I'd say that, I wasn't sure exactly on how you feel about this one. I know that it's generally regarded, like I've said, and it's a little bit more actiony. I mean, you got Battle of Helm's Deep,
Right. And I've even seen clips of all the Helm's Deep stuff here and there. And even from the, corridor, crew stuff where they react to visual effects and stuff. You see clips from Lord of the Rings and all this other stuff, and just with how long it's been around, I've seen clips. So just seeing the visual of the army coming to Helm's Deep and all that stuff, I knew something was about to go down, because it regarded as one of the big battles in the series, and and I was excited to see how, even from the clips that I saw, how they kind of play into each other and actually flesh it out, because I really didn't know what was gonna happen.
I don't know why it just reminded me of this, but there's a very specific shot in this of, I think it's when, I don't know if you remember, but they're like fighting, they're on horseback with some of the guys from, what is it, Ron? What, I can never remember the stupid name of the place, you know, Theoden's, Rohan, thank you. They're riding with the, you know, the riders of Rohan, and they're about to go up against the Uruk-hai on the wargs, which are, you know, like those hyena looking things. And Legolas does this insane like get up on a horse motion where he's on like he's on the right side of it and he like swings up under the neck and then gets onto the right side in slow motion.
None whatsoever. The momentum should have went the other direction. And it doesn't make any sense. On top of the horse.
He jumps left and goes right. It's
basically
it's hilarious.
I just kind of my head just went, you know what? Elf magic.
Turns out if you're alive for 800 years, you can learn how to do that, I guess.
Yeah, and there were a couple things here and there that, like, still, I guess, was one of the things, like in the last movie, where I was like, oh, it doesn't make a ton of sense. I feel like there were less in this one, or maybe I didn't see him as much because I was just more invested. But there were a couple of times like that, but I felt like I was able to just move past it better, partially just because I felt like I didn't care as much because I was just more invested. And maybe that helped because there was a lot more grand events happening in this one, because obviously they're building to, you know, like the war and of like, you know, like obviously they're fighting for Middle Earth and all this, and so like it's going to get more epic as it goes along,
right?
So there's a lot more grand events that are you build up to throughout this movie. Whereas the first one's a setup of, you know, the fellowship and this group, which can be really cool to explore characters and nuances. And I think they did a really good job with that. And I think that that first movie is very important and very necessary and still enjoyable because you get to meet these people who all have their own special, like for example, Avengers Endgame has a lot of main characters.
Mm-hmm.
And they're able to let all of them shine very well. And right. I almost compare it to that because I felt like I did enjoy the second movie more, but the first movie is still a, you know, it's still a good movie, and I felt like I was each person, and the fellowship all comes in at one time basically, but they were able to make each character different and you could still understand kind of who they were, and then throughout the rest of the series they're just continuing to flesh them out.
You wouldn't compare it more to like Infinity War?
I mean, sure, whatever. I'm just saying a movie with a lot of characters, bud. That's all I'm saying. So yeah, and also, and maybe I don't know if I'm just imagining this, but one of the notes that I took down, I was like, I think the acting is better in this movie than the first one, and I'm like, maybe I'm imagining it, maybe I'm just more invested, but I feel like just overall, not that it was horrible or bad necessarily, but there were some certain moments, like I just felt like I through what they were doing and saying and the way they're portraying it in this movie, I felt more connected to than the last one. What do you think?
I think that so the main issue that I have honestly with the acting in all of these movies, is from, Frodo and Sam. It's Elijah Wood and Sean Astin.
Maybe that's why, because there were less of them in this movie.
Yeah, that's usually, which it's just weird because they're, I don't know if it's actually bad or if the like translation of like this of like the super kind of naive hobbits into this world just feels a little off. I don't know if I can make that call, but it's just really strange. But that's they're pretty much, it is just less in this, but it feels the same. They're basically the same thing. I really, really hate how Frodo rolls his eyes into the back of his head every time something with the ring goes on. It just feels so odd. Like it doesn't, yeah. I don't know. That's pretty much all I can recognize. Everyone else always felt like you're great. All your rest, your main cast, you know, everyone from Gandalf to, you know, Aragorn. And then obviously I really love, although the king, like the guy, I can never remember his name, but the guy who has basically kind of control over King Théoden through Saruman, who's kind of like, he's got actually kind of a Loki look to him, but like, you know, more gross.
Yeah.
He is super over the top. And I think it's kind of the character, but it does.
He's not trying to hide it either. Like, do you mean like he's not trying to hide that he's evil?
Well, it's not even that. He's just so like over the top, evil, sniveling, conniving character.
Yeah,
it's
but
just
I feel like in this series, I've seen over the top, like though, like they're taking those kind of like evil or good or heroic type of characters, and they're pushing the envelope on them, and it feels to make more sense in this kind of world. So I kind of get it, and yeah, I guess it is a little over the top, but I just felt like he wasn't trying to hide that he's evil. Like, if that was their intention, like, it's very obvious. That would be the biggest thing for me.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I know he has control kind of over the king, and they're basically just doing what the king says. But, I mean, that should have a limit, right? I mean, you won't just do whatever the king says whenever. I mean, at some point, the guys who actually enforce the rules got to be like, this guy's stupid, bro. He clearly evil.
Yeah, you didn't live back at the time of kings and queens, dude. You do whatever your king says.
Nah, they got overthrown. That happened.
you're gonna overthrow the king, just you. You can do it, Nate.
No, I'm saying like all the yeah. That's what I'm saying. That is actually what I'm saying.
Really quickly too with the acting, even with those two characters, because I do agree with what you were saying, but when you have like Frodo and Sam in the beginning, and I think that's actually kind of when I noticed it, was at the very beginning when it picks up with those two. As it went on, there was more stuff with the ring, like you said, like where he rolls his eyes back into his head. Yeah. And all that stuff is kind of strange, I guess. But the beginning part with those two felt really good and really natural for me. Like the beginning of their little adventure, I was like,
yeah.
I felt like maybe it was they got more invested, and maybe overall why I'm thinking that the acting overall got better was maybe Gollum, everyone was more invested in their characters. I don't know.
I think Gollum gives them another, like, gives them more kind of, you know, it divides them up a little bit because obviously, Sam, you know, is very distrusting of him, kind of as he should be. And Frodo is, you know, feels bad for him. And so that kind of causes a divide between them. So it gives them a little bit more to work with other than they're just being, you know, perfect little friends the whole time, which, you know, gets a little stale. But so I could see, yeah, how that gives them a little bit more to do. It makes it more interesting. Yeah.
Really quickly going back to, I mentioned this a little bit just to give an overall view of like kind of why I was more into everything and all that, but the opening dude with Gandalf
is great, isn't it?
And I think Gandalf has to be my favorite character in this thing. And when he left for a while, and they were fighting at Helm's Deep, I was like, dude, where's Gandalf? I was like, he's been gone for a hot minute. We need him back. What is he doing? He rode off on his white horse, and he's got to come back. We need him. And I was we need more Gandalf, dude. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. That's kind of why I like Fellowship a little more, because I also, you know, I mean, it's hard not to love Gandalf, and that's kind of like his... That really feels like his movie, is Fellowship. I feel like he probably is in it the most in that one, although I could be misremembering Return of the King. But but it is still, I love like when he's riding off on his white horse and is all white with white beard and white hair and white staff, and that like, you know, theme is playing. The it's like almost Western, like it's super dope. Yeah, that's great.
Question though about Gandalf, because he was known as Gandalf the Gray, and now he's Gandalf the White.
Right.
So he technically, what I'm getting from this, is what I perceived. He technically fought the demon. He won, but he died.
Yep.
And then basically the mystical magics of the wizards and all that basically were like, no, you haven't served your full purpose, and basically gave him life back to fulfill this purpose.
Yeah, he's reborn. That's why he doesn't quite remember
who
he was.
Right, so that's why he was like, Gandalf, like, oh, that is what they used to call me. I was Gandalf the Gray, and now I'm Gandalf the White. So is it a different... It's almost like it's not quite the same Gandalf. That's what I'm trying to say is he came back, but it's like, it's almost like the old version died and the new version came back as this reborn, like almost with a little bit of amnesia, same dude, but kind of like has to still jog his memory to know exactly what happened.
Like no non like the Gandalf the Grey is much of, strikes me more as kind of like your he's almost got like the weird Jedi mentality where it's kind of like, oh well, you know, we'll do things if we have to, we usually try not to get involved, and that kind of, but like, you know, that kind of a little bit mentality of it, like the I guess prequel Jedi really more than the rest of them, but Gandalf the White is immediately like, nah, I ain't fucking around with all this. Like, he walks right into Theoden's things and, like, basically immediately fixes that situation. And then it's like, okay, I gotta go fuck some other people. I'll be back. Like, he's just no nonsense.
Like, because he was sent back with a purpose. And now, like, that's all he has to do is, like, you know, finish this quest, I guess, that he was given, which is why he was given life back. But even just, like, having more of the non-nonsense, I do feel like he's the same person but a different person at the same time. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. And it's cool that they were able to get that through, man.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, is that how you perceive it? Is that, do you like that?
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I definitely, I think that's what it's supposed to be. Yeah, for sure. And I do like that aspect, because I mean, it kind of, you know, whenever you have a kill character and then he just, you know, comes back, especially in this situation, because from the movie's perspective, you don't really know much about like how or why. It's just like magic. So having some kind of change in the character and having that, I don't want to say necessarily stakes, but it does, it feels like something did happen. It didn't feel like it was useless. It was like, well, why did he even die? And if he was just going to come back, then
I do agree. Yeah. Cause I think that it's better than just magically coming back with, you know, no change. Cause I even feel like it's to the point where even when, you know, Frodo, you know, sees him again, which I assume will happen. Don't tell me, but I assume it'll happen. That he will like Frodo especially will know that there's something different, and he'll like still miss his old pal Gandalf because he'll feel like he's almost kind of talking to a new person that has a similar memory. Does that make sense?
Right.
I get that.
But I do like that. Yeah, I'm trying to go through here. I didn't take very many notes because I was just kind of watching, which I think is good.
I get that.
Definitely think that. Another one of my favorite parts was when Gollum had his, like, inner argument with himself. Him and Sméagol. Back and forth. There was when one night when Frodo and Sam were, like, sleeping, and then, like, he's, like, talking to himself, basically telling him to leave. Like, telling the evil part of him, like, Gollum, to leave. And it kind of, like,
I think earlier in the movie, not the very end, right?
This is, like, yeah, this was like a third of the way through. It was like almost at an hour.
Yeah. I was talking about them.
Yeah. And the camera was going like from one side, and then it would slowly pan over to the other side, and the other guy would talk, and then it would pan back over to the other side. Mm-hmm. And that panning motion got quicker, and then it just got to jump cuts. And the way they edited that to where they were showing it's the same person. And once you understood that, they jumped it just back and forth to him being on like the right side of the screen facing left, and then the left side of the screen facing right when he was talking through his own, like, from each perspective. I don't know. I thought it was really well done, and it was very interesting. And then he basically banished his, you know, evil side, you know, Gollum, out of him, but, you know, only temporarily. He came back.
I think that that's that kind of, like, the way he portrays that is a big guideline for a lot of how, you know, characters who have, you know, an aspect of insanity or multiple personalities within themselves kind of, like, it's are shown later. I mean, you can even see kind of, like, how it's a very similar thing to a movie. Like, I don't know. Did you ever watch Split?
I didn't know.
Okay. Well, obviously that, you know, has that same kind of like multiple personality. Obviously there's a lot more personalities in Split than just, you know, basically you're evil and you're good. But it's I feel like that Gollum in this, especially because I think he gets the most amount of time in this movie, really shows and helps or kind of created the basis for like how it's done since then.
Yeah, because I've seen other, you know, things do it like this as well, but I don't know which ones actually, like, if I've seen any before Lord of the Rings, like, that came out before that, do it like this. So it's not that I haven't seen it before, and maybe this set the standard for, but it was just done really well, and it was a very compelling part of the story.
Right.
Also, though, I have to say that I don't remember his name, but the king of Rohan, who was...
Theoden.
What?
Theoden.
He sucks as a king.
Wow. Hot take.
Because, okay, let me talk to you real quick here.
Okay, so, hit me up.
First of all, basically, Gandalf and Aragorn and Legolas and Gimli, that whole group comes in. And they basically rescue him from this evil dude, right?
Sure.
And even saves him from killing him, which was obviously a, you could call a mistake, because he's who's telling them they're at, you know, Helm's Deep.
Yeah, Aragorn. I think it was Aragorn who said, don't kill him. There's been enough bloodshed. Like, that was stupid as hell.
Yeah, I mean, I
disagree with any, that would even happen. I think that was needed for him to go back and report to Saruman. And like, they wanted to get rid of him, but they wanted a way not to kill him. And so they just had this lazy excuse, like, there's been enough. That's such a trope in movies. There's been enough bloodshed. Fuck
yeah,
that. That's
you can totally...
You kill people all day, and you're going to save that guy? Okay.
Yeah, but this was a guy who was it's almost like one of those, I understand why they did it. I'm not saying it was the best way. I'm sure that if they didn't do that, if they killed him, they could have easily, the dude's a wizard. Saruman is a wizard. He could figure out how to find out that they're there, that they're at Helm's Deep. Sure. He could have figured out a better way to do it, I'm sure. But, so yeah, you could have done it better, but this other character who was evil and went back and reported to him, I also understand the heroic nature of, you know, he wasn't armed, so like not killing like an armed guy and all that kind of stuff. And not that they stated that specifically in the Lord of the Rings, like, oh, you can't kill somebody that's unarmed, but you know, it's a heroic trope and all this kind of stuff. And also just right. he was cowardly and scared and like, just let him go. You know, he's not causing any more problems here, just let him go. I get it, was a dumb
and executing people is usually seen as pretty like yikes.
Right. So I understand it to a degree. But anyways, back to the king. So they saved him from that. You know, Gandalf banished that spell over him and all that. And then they talk to him and they disagree with his idea of going to Helm's Deep. And that is going to trap them. But he's like, you know, it's basically saved us many times before. Going here, we can defend it, whatever. And they didn't really like get mad at him or anything like that. They did when they were away from him, like, oh, we disagree, and talked like in their own little group. But they respected his decision, and they were nice to him after they saved him. They respected his decision and went with him and helped him out and all this stuff. And then after all that and all the stuff that they've done to help them, when they get to Helm's Deep, he is like, we'll fight to our last breath, and just kind of disregards anything they have to say. Like, you should ask other people for help. He's like, nah, it's long past that. I'm not doing that. And I'm like, well, try. I get that you have this stuff, like, if you don't want to try, but you're just being mean. Like, everything that the ideas that they gave, like, we're going to die. It's 300 people against 10,000. And you're just like, well, we'll die to our last breath then. Suck it up. It's like, I get that's kind of a heroic king thing, but it's like, you're also just being awful. No, do you disagree?
The history of like Gondor and Rohan is probably, you know, more complicated than that. I don't know everything. It's kind of implied that, you know, they're not on great terms, and it's even a hell of a surprise that the elves show up. And honestly, if they had sent riders to Gondor, it wouldn't have helped anyway, because you see later in the movie what's happening in Gondor. They can't spare anybody. They're also fighting Mordor on the other side, basically. So it's not, you know, overall, it doesn't actually really change anything. Would it have hurt to send a guy out on a horse to run out? You know, probably not. But so, I mean, I get that. But at the same time, he's in a really stressful situation, you know, and honestly, you know, you could probably, even though he was kind of like under a spell, you know, type of thing, like, he probably also still blames himself. So that's kind of for the situation that he's in, you know,
right.
So for letting it go this far.
There's that. And then at the end, closer to the end, when he was like, we've lost, and they just kind of gave up, and there were still people fighting. Sure, you guys are pretty much dead, and you're lost. But he got to a point where he pretty much was just like, we're done. I'm giving up. And like, you were so for the part of, we're going to fight to our last breath. So if you want to be a noble like king and say, at least you're going to fight to your last breath, even by taking, you know, children who are, you know, male that are old enough to just hold a sword, which is, you know, horrible, but like that's kind of something that happens and you're just supposed to be emotionally invested in that. I get that. So I'm cool with that. But, and then to just kind of give up. And then Aragorn has to give him this speech of like, we have to fight to the last breath. It just, his arc is this, as this king from the group of people that helped save him. And then he wouldn't listen to any of their advice. And then he's like, well, we're going to at least fight. I'm like, well, you're kind of dumb because you could at least also try to listen to their advice, at least try to listen to their advice and get better reasons to why it wouldn't work. And then after all that, you don't even stick to your own plan and what you think is making you a powerful king, and you just give up. I don't know. It just, and then you had to get convinced by this other guy's like, yeah, we should ride out one last time. I'm like, dude, you suck. You suck as a king. And it didn't distract me from liking the movie. I just, as a character, and I think he played that character well, I just don't think he was a good king. Just don't think he was.
Well, the thing is that, like, Aragorn kind of does the same thing that Theoden does, where, you know, Aragorn's arguing for, you know, him to send out riders, and you have Theoden kind of has that whole speech of, like, what would you have me do moment, which I actually like a lot. But then later, Aragorn and Legolas are talking, and Legolas is basically telling him, it's when they're talking in Elvish, and Legolas is basically like, listen, like, this is not going to work. We're going to die if we stay here. Like, you know, it's kind of not our mission to die with these 300, you know, soldiers of Rohan. Like, it's not, we have a thing that we are clearly supposed to send out to go do. We're supposed to help get the ring to Mordor. That's it. That's all that matters. So if we die here, it's all in vain. And obviously Aragorn rejects that. And he says, you know, that we're going to die with him. So you kind of, what you're complaining about Theoden, Aragorn does a little bit too, but
I thought that was kind of dumb of him at the time as well. But Aragorn, like the way we've seen his character progress and then maybe get a little bit to the point of like having to be loyal and having to be this powerful, you know, person. And then at the end, I feel like he has enough changes and we can relate to him enough to where the king, maybe I just didn't get enough time with him, but I felt like, and again, it's not that like, it distracted me from the movie. It's not even that the character wasn't a good character for the movie. I just think as a personal standpoint, I was like, it made the movie interesting, but I just think he's a bad king. That's just my opinion. I just think, well, he sucked as a king.
So Aragorn is like obviously descendant of kings, and he's, you know, kind of like the unofficial, like, you know, head guy, being, you know, a descendant of, I can never remember his name, but the guy who originally basically ended Saruman all those thousands of years ago. So, you know, he is supposed to be like the best of them. So you, in a way, they kind of needed someone like Theoden to kind of like, you know, they wanted him to also be a good king. And I think, you know, maybe we don't know enough to make that judgment, but, you know, he has to kind of come off as the more admirable, more courageous, more optimistic kind of guy. And so you have to bounce off of somebody who disagrees with you. And so, maybe that's not the best way to do it, but I kind of see where they were going with that. If that makes sense.
Again, yeah. And again, I'm just saying this is the fun part. My fun personal opinions of like, oh, what I thought of this and what I thought of that. And like, not even necessarily in a movie making perspective. Bro, you suck as a king, dude. And I'm cool. People hate me for that. Like, if you think he's a great, I guarantee there's other people who agree with me that like Lord of the Rings, and it might
a lot more about it and stuff like that. Yeah, but you know what I thought was funny when we were talking about the acting earlier. It might remind me. I went on like a kind of a weird tangent where, like, I remember I was telling you that Aragorn was supposed to be Nicolas Cage when we talked about the Fellowship. Turns out I found out that originally, Peter Jackson wanted Jake Gyllenhaal to be Frodo, and that he had him come in and audition, and Jake Gyllenhaal bombed the audition because he didn't know that they were doing like English accents. So I just love the idea that Jake Gyllenhaal comes in and he's like, oh, what's up, Gandalf? Like, are we going? Rings, Mordor? Like, I just doing it in like a regular American accent is so funny to me, because anytime you have a medieval based movie, they're always English accents every time.
Well, first of all, that's hilarious. I agree. But also, why? That's enough to bomb the audition to just be like, my point is, from a casting point of view, why didn't people who I was auditioning for go, we're doing this with accents? like, I feel like that's a thing to where, and maybe it was written down, so they're like, we're not going to tell him because he should know, and it's embarrassing enough that he didn't read the script well enough, so he's not invested enough. We don't want him in our movie, I guess. But why don't just be like, just to see how he would do, to be like, do you mind trying this thing in an English accent?
He might have been like, I can't do a...
Right.
Yeah.
That might have happened. I have more chance of believing in an accent.
19? You know what I mean? This was like before he had really done anything. Because this is when they were casting Frodo for the first time. So this is well before like any of the actual productions, like well before the movies came out. So he was young. And it would make sense to me if he just like didn't know or he maybe couldn't do an English accent. Now thinking about his career, I don't know if I've ever heard him do an English accent in the movie.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I have either.
It's never really come off that he's been English. He could probably make it work now or something like that. But,
okay.
Another
part of the movie that I thought was really funny.
Yeah,
was when Gimli looks at Aragorn when they sneak around to the front of the front gate to like fend off all the evils, the Uruk-hai and stuff. And he looks at him and he goes, "Toss me." And I just started laughing because obviously in the last movie he's like, no one tosses a dwarf. He's like, don't tell the elf.
Yeah, Gimli gets a lot of good. There's a lot of short Gimli jokes in this movie.
I want to see Gimli be, hopefully I will in this next one, I want to see him be like just an awesome axe wielding fighter, and we saw a little bit of that, but this movie just had a lot of like humor
when
at his expense.
Throw Gimli in on the bridge at Helm's Deep. I swear, if you look at the orc, it's like a cannonball landed. It's like they all get thrown out. I watched this movie twice over the past week. Coincidentally, like I watched it, you know, once because I, you know, knew we were doing this, obviously. But then I just happened to watch it again because I was with some people who were just watching it. And one of the people we were watching it with is a huge Lord of the Rings fan, like knows a lot of the lore, and he was telling me that dwarves were made how they are, right? So they're really small because they were made by one of the, you know, like one of the gods of Lord of the Rings, but before the god had ever seen man or elves, so he didn't know the proportions correctly, so he's just like, that's probably what they look like. He just made a little person basically.
That's hilarious.
Not knowing that
dude,
they're supposed to be like 6 feet tall or whatever, but canonically I think they're, you know, like a lot tougher and stronger than like your average dude, even though they're like really small. So,
right. No, yeah, that, I think so as well. But that's what I'm saying is I want to see that because this movie had a lot of humor at Gimli's expense, which was good. But I also want to see him be like this fun, like that funny dude, but who's also like a crazy, awesome, like strong axe wielding warrior man. So let's see what else I got here. I don't know, man. Do you have any other specifics that you want to talk about? Because I really did like it all around. There were moments that I actually got like just super pumped and like got chills just because I was like, oh yeah, this is epic, dude. I love it.
I always think the part where they meet, where it's a Frodo and Sam bit, and they get caught basically by Faramir. And that whole interaction and the weird thing with Gollum and that, where like, you know, he like, Frodo admits who he is. Like he doesn't lie about who he is, but he lies about Gollum being with them. And then he's basically used later, to like trick Gollum into being in custody. And it's just a weird thing. It's just like, I don't understand the motivation. Maybe I'm missing something here, but like, why did he not lie about who he was? He could have just said, oh, I'm just running away from the war. You know, when he got picked up, like I'm nobody. Because you know, it's kind of known that the Baggins name is kind of known. Like I think Gandalf and Fellowship specifically told him, don't tell people you're a Baggins. So that's, you know, he didn't lie about that, but then he lied about Gollum. Like, why not just admit who he was before? It's just a weird interaction that creates conflict where it didn't feel like there needed to be.
Was there an issue with, like, should he have even told him that Gollum was with them?
Why not? right? Because why did he lie? Because the whole point of why Faramir went through all this stuff is because he didn't trust him. And so obviously when he found out the lie, that hurt the trust more. And so they had to go through all this. They almost got killed in Gondor and all this other stuff happened because of this dumb lie that I don't know why happened. They could have just said, we're running away. We got lost and, you know, we got all mixed up and stuff we shouldn't have been in. This guy, this little creature, we've reluctantly teamed up with him because he's guiding us through. We're just trying to get out of here, basically. I feel like that's a perfectly reasonable thing to say. I mean, who would have expected two hobbits to have the most powerful thing in existence? You know what I mean? That's not, that doesn't make any sense. So,
but I think they kind of know that Gollum wants the ring, no?
I don't know why they would know who Gollum is. That could be something. I'm missing.
I was going to say who Gollum was. They know that he's looking for the ring, which would be the only reason Gollum is even near these people.
As far as I know, the reason that Gollum had the ring for so long is because it was assumed that it was lost, and then like Gollum had it, and he was just basically hoarding himself. I don't see Gollum as being a person that people know about in the world. You know what I mean? Right. He's not like Gandalf. He's just this weird thing. In fact, they didn't even say his name. They just said that creature, that gangly one or whatever.
Like I said, there are still like that is one of them, but there are still a few moments in this movie that you're kind of like, this doesn't really make sense. And I'm kind of interested to know what the books kind of say about all this stuff. Like how does this compare to the books? Was this just to further the plot along for the movie? Because I feel like books are pretty decent at like being able to explain stuff in a way to make the plot, you know, move on.
Probably a lot easier in a book to go back and change something because you don't have to reshoot it. You just erase them, you know?
Right,
you just
so go, I'm not saying actually it's not necessary. I'm just saying that because of that, because usually I feel like there's not as many plot holes in books as there are in movies.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong, but that's how I think.
I think there's a lot less constraints in books in general. Like, you know, things can be a lot longer or they can be shorter. Like, you know, it's you can play around with that as right. you want.
Right. So there's a lot less opportunity for there to be plot holes in books than there are movies. So I'm wondering if that was an issue like that or other issues with, you know, plot holes in this movie. If that was present in the book or if that was just because obviously they have to make this into a movie to fit into a certain amount of time. And so they have to come up with something to move along.
I wouldn't even say it's necessarily a plot hole because, you know, a character making a poor decision isn't necessarily a plot hole unless it's egregious, right? Like, you know, I mean, if you have a character who's a scientist and then you ask him some basic science and he goes, oh, I don't know, and he dies because of it, that would be a plot hole to me. But a character under pressure making a dumb decision just by itself probably wouldn't count. It's just a little odd.
Right.
That's pretty much it. I'm not going to hanker on it too much.
The Ents were cool.
Yeah, no, the Ents are dope. That whole like raid on Isengard is super. Did you see they light one of the Ents on fire when they're raiding? And then when they break the dam and they basically flood it, you see him, the guy on fire, rush into the water. It's really funny.
Yeah, so funny enough, I actually turned this on and my mom was watching it too because I split this up into, usually I'm like I want to watch it all in one go, but I had to split this one up into like watching the first half one night and the second half another night.
Sure.
So my mom like caught it as I was starting it, so she sat down and watched it, and then so when I was watching it the other night she was like, oh, I'm finishing this, and so she watched it with me and she saw that part and I didn't even catch it. She goes, oh my gosh, that dude, that tree's head was on fire and he dipped in the water. That was hilarious. I said, what? And I had to rewind it. And I saw it.
It's really good. That part's great. Although,
I thought they were going to go to Helm's Deep and save them. I thought that's what was going to be the savior because they saw the armies moving out and Merry and Pippin saw the armies moving out. So thought they were going to go where the armies were going to help that fight. And then they just went to attack Isengard. And I was like, okay, well, fighting on two fronts, that's still cool. But that's not what I was expecting. Also,
Isengard
be that close to the forest when they came out of the forest. So that was the reason they went straight to Isengard.
Yeah, they went inside, I think they went on because you remember they have Pippin has the Ent turn around.
Yeah, they're
and
going.
Go.
It's like, no, let's go south. And the tree goes, I've always liked south. It always feels like I'm walking downhill.
For a guy who apparently says, you know, trees don't often talk because it takes a long time to say, so what you say better be worth saying. He says a lot of dumb shit.
Oh man. I think, dude, that's it. I don't have anything else to say. There's plenty of other specifics, like I feel like that I could get into, but I can't remember all of them, mainly because I took less notes because I did just feel more invested. So it's getting to me. I'm even more excited for the last one, and if it lives up to the excitement, not expectation of what's going to happen, more of just the excitement and continuing to keep me involved, then I will stamp of approval on this series. But man, we'll just see what this next movie brings for me.
Yeah. And then we'll go right into The Hobbit, and dude, you'll just be so disappointed.
That's what I've heard. I mean, I heard that before I even saw Lord of the Rings. I heard that people didn't like The Hobbit, and they love the Lord of the Rings, but I feel like that's kind of always how it happens with these kind of things. How many Hobbits are there?
Three. Same amount.
So, again, they're taking a page out of Star Wars, huh? They're doing the main trilogy, and then they're doing early trilogy. So we're just waiting on the sequel trilogy now, guys.
So Tolkien is kind of known for having like three series, even though The Hobbit was the first thing he wrote like in this universe, I believe. I know it was definitely before The Lord of the Rings and then later on The Silmarillion, but I don't know if he wrote something else weird. But
so he wrote The Hobbit first?
Hobbit was written
interesting.
First, and it's aimed toward children. Much more than like The Lord of the Rings and Silmarillion are. And it's a lot shorter. It's one book, it's really short. In fact, like a lot of people, you know, kind of grew up on The Hobbit, the book. I know that like my parents, you know, both read it when they were kids, I believe. And so the egregious thing about The Hobbit is that you take this like 80 page kids book and you make it into like three movies that are, I think, pretty long too. Like they're not like 90 minute three movies. They're like 2 hours plus each, three movies for this 80 page book.
I'm definitely gonna read the book first. If it's not a very long book that I know
I'm pretty true,
I'll probably read the book and then go watch the movies out of curiosity.
Yeah, I haven't read the book actually, but maybe I should. Maybe I'll do that too. Maybe not.
Yeah, probably not. You don't read.
But I've just heard that it's very much like a like two sentences from a book will be stretched on for like a 20 minute scene. Just because. Okay, the book page count seems a little longer than I thought. 310. But still, that's not like crazy for a, you know, a book, and that's still a lot. I mean, if you probably count
all, it's still a lot for three movies.
Books, then you'd be like, okay, how do they even do this?
Now, I know script writing and book writing completely different. I do know this. Because obviously you don't describe stuff as in much detail in
a script
than you do a book. But if you're going off of scripts, are roughly the way that the industry kind of does it is a page is about a minute of screen time.
Right.
So if we take that, and honestly, it would actually, a page would be less because they just describe things longer. So it would actually probably be less, maybe even half a minute. So it would be even harder. But let's just go with the minute. A 300 page book in three movies, that's 100 pages. So that's 100 minutes, which is like an hour and what's 100 minutes. So
120 minutes is 2 hours.
So it's an hour and 40 minutes. So an hour and 40 minutes. But let's say because a book can describe more, let's say it's half. So we're talking like half a movie length, maybe. Maybe.
Probably like 90 minutes. Yeah, 90 minutes would be fair.
No, but 90 minutes is like a movie length because that's what I'm saying. 90 minutes and you bump it up to 100, it's 140 minutes. But if you say that a book, since you can go into more description or whatever, you can describe it more in depth, is actually not a page per, or a minute per page. It's less because you're just describing. Half, say half of that.
Page
you're talking
book
like 45 into, minutes, maybe.
I don't.
My point is, it's really going to be hard to stretch that into three movies. I'm just agreeing with that. So it'll be interesting to see.
I don't think you could do The Hobbit in 45 minutes, but that would be.
But we'll see. Yeah. Now we're just talking about future plans. So
we're not committing to doing The Hobbit right after Lord of the Rings.
Keep up with us and follow the next episode. Obviously, we'll be doing the last Lord of the Rings movie, and maybe we'll make an announcement if we're going to do The Hobbit or not. We'll see. We'll have some discussions, but that's all I got for this one.
Yep. Cool. All right.
Guys, go follow all our stuff. I got to plug it. What are you saying? We're talking at the same time. You go.
I said, we've been us, you've been you, I'm a movie, you're a brother.
All right, so that's all it. Of what you said was nonsense anyways. Yeah, go follow at That's Movies Brother on Instagram. If you guys are listening to this on Apple Podcasts and you enjoyed, please give us a rating, preferably 5 stars. If that'd be great. Really helps us out a lot. We're also on YouTube.
Follow us on Twitter, too. Wow.
Yeah, we're on Twitter. We're on Facebook. Go find us anywhere you can.
I need a good, substantial following on Twitter so I can tweet out crazy stuff and people have to listen to it because I have followers. So we can make that happen.
But in the meantime, we'll be on every podcast platform you can think of. If you can find one that we're not on, I'd be impressed. And
actually, let me know so I can get on there.
Yeah.
I don't know all of them. I mean, I just kind of let the thing does it for us. I don't know.
But it's a lot. We're on a lot. So, come back next week for the last conclusion,
last conclusion
movie of the series of the Rings of Lords. And we'll see you guys next week.